fingers of Yucky Pan. Didn't excite much attention. 2 years later, he asked the same question, probably with about the same. Atua and Tragicomba were going to arose here and Bambi became quite concerned about the ordination of elders and church throughout the land. To our amazement, everything was still here and there, the elders and the church. We also wonder where did they come from? Where were they? But this young man was asking that question. Really, the answer to his question was they were right there in that assembly. They were in the assemblies throughout the land. The problem was that he was just not looking for them. Then, more recent years and in more recent months, there are others that have arisen with a real sense of urgency about the need of elders in the congregations. And further to our amazement, we're seeing elders popping up all over the place. We ask the question again, what was the difference then? Many years ago, when that young man was asking that question, and now, what was the difference in the quality of people that we found? Some people would have us believe that the church is in worse shape now than it was then. But now we're beginning to see elders. Well, I believe that the real answer to the question is that we're now beginning to see a sense of urgency arising here and there. And that's what my lesson has to do about it, has to do with it. A sense of urgency about the ordination of elders in the church. So I ask the question, first of all, why haven't we seen elders in the church sooner? Why haven't we seen them arising here and there? Number one, I would say it is because that we haven't had this general sense of urgency about the ordination of elders. In my preparation for this subject, I was amazed to find how little material there was available in any form, such as a book or a tract, on the urgency of elders. I found a lot on the mechanics, a lot on the qualifications, but very little on urgency. I certainly would recommend to you an article in the recent Watchman June issue by Brother Johnny Elmore, which of course deals with this urgent matter. But really, in any voluminous form, we don't find a lot of information about the urgency of elders. But I must say this, in defense of my brethren, there have been those down through the years who have had this sense of urgency in isolated cases and were able to accomplish quite a bit in times past, and I could name them for them. But certainly I would do no justice to them, and I certainly might do an injustice to someone else who might have had this sense of urgency. But the problem is that they have not been able to motivate the rest of us. I've drawn in the us there. Now I realize that all of us at some time or other have had some excitement about the matter. I believe that every preacher in this audience has a sermon on the eldership, and you've preached it. Maybe you've preached a series of sermons on it. You've been excited about it for a while, but not for an extended length of time. And certainly it has not become a general sense of urgency, no lasting attitude that would move all of us to the place where we'd see elders really in every church. But I'm certainly happy to see that that attitude is changing. It's very encouraging to me to know that the two congregations who support this meeting have elders now. I certainly think that that is a move in the right direction. I hope to see that sense of urgency catch on in the years ahead. The second reason that I don't believe that we've had elders sooner is because that we have required perfection in our elders. We've never required that of preachers, although we find qualifications in Timothy and Titus, but we've never required perfection in our preachers. And actually, there are no perfect men. We must remember that the God of heaven has not called angels, but he's called men to be elders in the church of the Lord. And by that, I don't mean that we should throw out the qualifications and just ordain elders without any kind of thought about qualification and indiscriminately ordain elders here and there. Certainly not. I believe that would be wrong. In fact, I would say that we need to have men who have all of the qualifications that are laid down in the Scriptures to an appreciable degree, to some good degree. I believe that they should have all of them. But I don't think that you're ever going to find men who are qualified perfectly. You know, as I read the qualifications in the Scripture, there's one thing that stands out, and that is that an elder must be a proven Christian, and then he must be a proven leader. The qualifications have to do with character, spirituality, and maturity, and leadership. And these are the kind of people that we need to find here and there. But the very best of men have to grow. There's always room for growth. Even the Apostle Paul, who was a spiritual giant, said, "Brethren, I have not attained, I have not apprehended." The Apostle Peter, who was also an elder, as we shall notice in 1 Peter 5, 1 through 4, certainly was no perfect man. But yet, these men were certainly perfect in the sense that the Scriptures present. You see, perfection in the Scriptures has to do with maturity and completeness. But it doesn't have to do with sinless perfection. And I think that's what we have required of our elders. The fact remains that there are those that will be more qualified than others. You see, the Bible tells us in 1 Timothy 5 and 17 that the elders that rule well are to be worthy of double honor. If one rules well, that lets us know that there are others that are going to rule less well. That doesn't mean that they're less qualified for the eldership, or that is, they're not to be ordained. The Bible tells us that an elder is to be apt to teach. But we must all admit that there are some that are more apt and more skillful in teaching than others. What I found out among preachers is that what one lacks, the other is able to supply. That's true with regard to elders as well. Well, they're good men, they're devout men, they're godly men. But elders do make mistakes, just like anybody. In fact, the Apostle Paul in 1 Timothy 5, 19 through 20 said that there are certain ways that we're to deal with elders that are sinful, are calling sin. And then he said then that sin are to be rebuked before all. So elders not perfect, their wives are not perfect, their children are not perfect, and certainly the people that they deal with and serve are not perfect either. Another reason I don't think that we've had elders before this time is because that we sometimes really don't want elders. I believe there are some congregations that appear to be anti-elders. They don't have elders, they haven't had elders, and they have no plan for elders in the future. And so it seems to be the fact that they are anti-elders. Well, sometimes people are just satisfied with going along with the status quo. They want to maintain things just as they are. They think sometimes that elders would just interrupt the good system, and it would be awkward to them to ordain elders. Evidently, the apostles disagreed with that, because they wanted elders in every church and in every city, according to Acts 14 and 23 and Titus 1 and 5. I suspect that there are those that are not really ready to submit to the authority of elders. I'm afraid that there are leaders that are qualified for the eldership that are not willing to step down and submit themselves to the authority of those who are qualified. And there are members of the church that want their equal say and are not willing to give up that equal say in the business meeting to elders. The Bible tells us in 1 Thessalonians 5, 12 and 13 that the elders are over you in the Lord. 1 Timothy 5, 17 and 18, the elders are to rule well. Hebrews 13, 7 and 17, they have the rule over you. You're to obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourself. Sometimes that goes against the grain. We live in a rebellious age and we resent authority. But if we are to have the church as the church should be, we must recognize and submit to the authority of elders. The fourth reason is that there are men who have no desire for the office. They're qualified, or they could qualify, but they just don't want to be elders. Chris Christopherson, some years ago, recorded the song, "Why Me, Lord?" And I think there's some fine qualified men across the country that are asking the same question, "Why me?" I think the better question would be, "Why not me? I'm of age, I'm the husband of one wife, I'm apt to teach, I'm trying to live a Christian life, why cannot I desire this office?" In 1 Timothy 3 and 1, this is a true saying, "If a man desire the office of bishop, he desireth a good work." Sometimes I think men ask, who on earth would want the job? Who on earth would want the office? Well, the apostle tells us why we should want it. He says, because it is a good work. Not because that you want to rule over other people, or you want the opportunity to get your way or to put over your program, but because that you want to do a good work for the Lord. You see, the Apostle Paul told Titus that he was to be ready unto every good work. Now, if a man has knowledge and he has ability and he has opportunity, there comes responsibility. If a man has the ability and the knowledge to be an elder and he has the opportunity to be an elder, I think there comes the responsibility to do so. There's no greater work. One man said that he'd rather be an elder in the Lord's church than to be the president of the United States. Then another reason, I think, is because that some people have thought that in order to be an elder, you've got to be ancient. You've got to be not only old, but you've got to be old in order to be. But you know, I think that I know some men who are in their 40s that are completely qualified for this office. And they have many productive years before them that they can even better qualify themselves for the office of the elder. Robert Milligan said, that man is old enough who has the wisdom that is profitable to direct in all things. Scheme of Redemption, page 323. I realize that age enters into it. We need men that are distinguished by the wisdom and the sound judgment that comes with age. But that age is not all that there is to it. There must be this moderation. There must be long suffering. There must be wisdom and sound prudence. Somebody has said that an elder needs to wear glasses to look wise. He needs to have gray hair to look experienced, and an ingrown toenail to look concerned. But you know, I think that makes just about as much sense as requiring that they be so old that their productive years have actually passed. Another reason is because we just don't really know that we have these qualified men, or at least we have men who are potentially qualified for the office. Back in 1845, it is said there were two brothers who came to America from Europe. One of them had the ability to raise cabbages and make sauerkraut, and the other had no trade. Well, the older brother, who had this ability, joined himself to a wagon train and went to California. He raised cabbages on a fine farm. The younger brother studied metallurgy. Some years later, he went out to California to visit his brother. His brother took him out to see all of his cabbages that he was raising. The younger brother showed no interest in the cabbages, but rather in the soil on which they were being raised. So while the older brother was getting quite concerned, irritated, he said, "Now, I've shown you the finest cabbages in all of California," and he said, "You've had no good word to say." The young man picked up a rock. He said, "You know what that is?" He said, "That's what?" He said, "You know what that yellow spot is in that stone?" He said, "That's gold." He said, "You have been raising cabbages in a gold." You know, I think in the church, we have been doing the same. We have been satisfied with mediocrity. We have been able to do some wonderful things. The very fact that this study is being carried on from year to year in such a fine fashion continues to grow shows that we're doing some good things. We're raising some fine cabbages, but I think we're raising cabbages in a gold field. I believe that out here in this audience and in audiences throughout the country, we have some men who could be leaders in the church, great leaders in the church, that could lead us to the greatness that the church really deserves. Then I think there's some of these men that are just reluctant to serve. They're afraid to use their talents. They need to be pushed and motivated by the rest of us to occupy their office. You know, it's amazing to me how many awkward and backward men in biblical history and secular history have arisen to be great leaders. Take Moses, for instance. God wanted to lead the people of Israel out of Egyptian bondage, but he said, "I'm not eloquent, I'm full of speech, full of tongue," but God made him a great leader. Gideon said, "Why, I'm come from a poor family, the poorest of the family," but God made him into a great leader. Daniel Webster said that when he was a young man, he was afraid to stand before his class and deliver a speech. He said he would prepare the speech perfectly and memorize it verbatim, but he said when his name was called, he couldn't get up to speak, and he'd often weep about the matter. But he became a great orator. What's amazing to me is that across the country, I find some men who are so timid that they wouldn't lead in silent prayer. But they're sometimes challenged in industry, and they're challenged in salesmanship, and before you know it, they are rising to high opportunities and offices of leadership. Sometimes people say we are monetarily motivated. I wish that we could be motivated by the true riches, like we're motivated by money. Then we could really see some great leaders in the Lord's church. Another reason, this is the last one, some people say it's just too soon. Too soon to ordain elders. You know, I believe it is too soon in some cases, but in some people's mind, it's always too soon to ordain elders. The apostles didn't think so, and I read that in Acts 14 and 23. What we need to do is get up off of our seat of complacency. and arise and realize that there is an urgent need for leadership in our churches. There's a need for elders. And realize that while we're thinking it may be too soon, we may be faced with the fact that it is too late. We've waited too long. Well, why do we need elders now? Well, I think there's several reasons. I believe that the Lord has always recognized the need for elders in every dispensation. I believe it's inferred that in the patriarchal age, the patriarchs were the elders of God. They were the spiritual leaders. They were the rulers of their family. But then in the Mosaical age, I find that it's especially so then, because we find the word for elders 100 times in the Old Testament. Moses was sent by God to the elders of Israel to lead them out of Egyptian bondage. They accompanied Moses before Pharaoh when he made his demand. The elders were the ones who led in the institution of the Passover. They accompanied Moses when he brought water from the rock. Moses committed God's law to the elders of Israel. For Moses committed God's plan of worship unto Aaron and to the elders. Moses worked with the elders. He was accompanied in the discipline of the people with by elders. The elders acted in making decisions concerning the keeping of the Old Testament law. I could give you all of those passages. In fact, Mr. Milligan says, from such passages, it is manifest that the official sense of the word elder is derived from the primitive or patriarchal form of government, under which every father was both a ruler and a priest. This he says on page 323 of the Scheme of Redemption. The Jewish Sanhedrin had its elders. In fact, it had 24 elders, 24 scribes, and 24 priests. And this was the most powerful body in all of Judaism. And they recognized the concept that leadership is characterized by age and by wisdom and by righteousness. The Jewish synagogues had their elders. You might read Smith's Bible Dictionary on the synagogue that gives reference to this very fact. Men who led in the worship and led in the instruction of the Jewish synagogue. You see, the Jews had no difficulty in accepting the eldership of the church because they had been under elders all along the way. Of course, the New Testament church had elders. Let me read from Milligan again. He said, no church in primitive times was regarded as complete and capable of sustaining itself without elders. Paul and Barnabas ordained elders in every church. And Titus was left in Crete that he might ordain elders in every city, Titus 1 and 5. I'd say if they needed elders in the patriarchal, the mosaical, and also the Christian age, certainly we need them today. Secondly, the nature of the church requires that we have elders. The word church is collective now, as far as I can see. It's used in at least two major senses of the scriptures. It is used in the universal or the general sense, referring to all of God's people throughout the world and all of God's people even in the spiritual world as well. And of course, it has no organization, has no government. Jesus Christ is the head of the church and we're his body. But then it's used in the local or the congregational sense. In the congregational sense, in that sense, there is requirement for organization. You see, a local collective requires at least three things. It must have, first of all, agreement. Agreement to work together and worship together and meet together. Secondly, it needs a pooling of resources or a pooling of abilities in order for them to engage in this together action. And then thirdly, there must be oversight for this together action to be carried on properly. Now that oversight might be manifest when a church is unorganized without elders, just as we do it today. It's a very awkward way, and it has a lot of problems that we'll present later in our lesson. But it can be done that way. There is some sense of oversight in it being done that way. But God's plan calls for overseers. And those overseers are called bishops and elders and pastors in the scriptures. In Acts the 20th chapter, the 28th verse, we find all of these words. He was talking to the elders, and he told them that God had sent them to be shepherds, and he told them to tend and feed the flock. He said, over the which the Holy Ghost hath made you overseers to feed the church of God, which he had purchased with his own blood. Now that we can get by without them, we have been for a lot of years. But I think we've been limping along. Brother Carnegie back there can get by with one hand. Somebody else may get by with one leg, but he's going to get by much better when he has everything working right. The same is true with Garden Church. The time has come that we need to correct this unhealthy situation, because our plan has just not worked effectively. Then thirdly, I believe that every New Testament church had elders, even the church at Jerusalem. If there ever was a church that did not need elders, that was one, because they had apostles in their membership. But over in Acts the 15th chapter, I find that not only did they have apostles, they had elders. Because there in Acts 15 and 6, and the apostles and elders came together for to consider this matter. Verse 22, then pleased it the apostles and elders with the whole church to send chosen men. Verse 23, and they wrote letters by them after this matter, the apostles and elders and brethren sent greetings. Yes, they had elders in the church at Jerusalem. There were elders, 2 of 5, Philippians 1 and 1, at Ephesus, Acts 20 and 28, Thessalonica, 1 Thessalonians 5 and 12. You see, the churches were unorganized only briefly in New Testament time. An unorganized church was the exception to the rule. Today, the exception has become the rule. We have more unorganized churches than we have organized churches in the Lord's church. Titus 1 and 5, for this cause I left thee in Crete, that thou shouldest set in order the things that are wanting, and ordain elders in every city as I had appointed thee. There must have been a need for that. Paul would have not have given attention to it. In Acts 14 and 23, the Apostle Paul and Barnabas were on their first missionary journey. They traveled about 1,200 to 1,500 miles over a period of about 3 to 5 years. But they reached a certain point and retraced their steps. And as they retraced their steps, they established and reconfirmed the churches in the truth of God's word. But in this verse, we find it in that context. And when they had ordained them elders in every church, and it prayed with fasting, they committed them to the Lord of whom they believed. The question might come, how did they do it so quickly? You see, the apostle over in 1 Timothy 3 and 6 said, you're not to ordain an office, not a new convert, but of these people. Well, I can reach only one conclusion, and that is that Paul is not going to tolerate any exception. And so I must realize, must conclude that these people were beyond the status of new converts, and were well equipped to assume the responsible role of being elders. One explanation is the fact that many of these have been converted from Judaism. Maybe some of them were even elders in the Judaistic church. That's entirely possible. But at least they were people who were, could easily make the transition into the New Testament system and the New Testament doctrine. And so it wouldn't take them as long as possibly it would a heathen that should be converted unto Christianity. But these men, regardless, had about a 3 to 5 year period. You know, it's amazing what growth can be made in 3 to 5 years. I've heard some young preachers, and I thought, boy, you'll never make it. 3 to 5 years later, I think, boy, you're way ahead of me. Because these young men can make such growth in such a short period of time. But you know, we're dealing with a situation today in which we have men that have been raised in the church all of their lives, who have been here all along, who know the truth. And I say that in 3 to 5 years, they can easily be qualified for the office of an elder, just as these men were qualified. But there's one thing that stands out. That is, the apostles didn't waste time. They didn't procrastinate. They got on with the job, realizing that a top priority was the ordination of elders in the Lord's church. A fourth reason that we need them now is because the church is not a democracy. We've lived under a democratic form of government in this country so long that we have decided that maybe it's a good form of government in the church. So we have a rule. We have a majority rule, and we think that this is a good system for us to follow. I'll tell you, my friends, majority rule is a very awkward way for the church to deal with. It's usually ruled by business meetings in which there is a consensus that is accepted or is gained, and then we act according to the consensus of opinion. Now, sometimes today that works pretty good. It'll run smoothly for a while. It surely has its problems. You just introduce one discordant element into that business meeting, and he can upset the whole project. You introduce one disgruntled member into a business meeting, and he'll turn that thing upside down before you know it. And sometimes we give a deference to these people that are disgruntled and so are so opposed to everything but what they're for. That it ends up with a minority rule rather than a majority rule. Then sometimes the youngest members of the church, they have as much to say about it as the oldest, most mature members of the body of Christ. There are some instances in which families have been able to run the church to the votes of their sons. And too often, everybody's business becomes nobody's business. See, if you don't have men who are qualified to oversee and who have the authority to see that things are done, then nobody has any authority. So it always ends up with let George do it, and George doesn't do it, and therefore it's not done. God's plan is the best plan, I think. When we have mature men, men of wisdom, sound judgment, invested with the responsibility of seeing that the work is done, seeing what the talents and the abilities of every member of the church utilized as we're taught this morning, and directing them in doing that, then we'll see that the work is done. God's plan is best. I would say again that we need elders today because it's a practical necessity. See, every group that agrees to work together must have some form of government. That's true in our nation, our states, our cities, our schools, our businesses, in our homes, and it's true of the church. The absence of government always brings anarchy and chaos eventually. We need it for a practical necessity as regards an orderly worship, as has already been quoted during the course of this meeting, 1 Corinthians 14, with regard to the assembly. He said, let all things be done decently and in order. Let all things be done unto edifying. If we have elders, these men can see that it's done in the right way, at the right time, by the right person, that everything is done scripturally, that the teachers are well informed and qualified to teach the church, and the gainsayer can be routed as a result of their leadership. Then it's a practical necessity to see that the chief mission of the church is carried out. I believe the pressing obligation of the church today, and always has been, the preaching of the gospel of Jesus Christ unto the world. And we need men who can provide and can maintain a scriptural plan of evangelism and lead in it and direct in it so that the gospel can be preached unto those that are lost. I believe that the only way that we're going to have evangelistic churches is when we have evangelistic elders in those churches to lead us. That is a practical necessity with regard to church discipline. See, under our present system, we've acted so unwisely in so many cases. We have carried out church discipline in some cases in which the real purposes of discipline were not accomplished. The chief priority of discipline is to save the disorderly walker. The concurrent priority is to protect the church against the evildoer and his influence. But in some cases, we've carried it out so poorly that we completely drive away the evildoer, never to return. And a stigma is left upon the church from which the church never recovers. If you've got elders of wisdom and knowledge and moderation and long-suffering and patience, and leadership, much of it can be completely averted. And I would like to read to you from 1 Peter 5, 1 to 4. Give several reasons, but I want to note just about four. The elders which are among you I exhort, who am also an elder, Peter said he was an elder, and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint but willingly, not for filthy lucre but of a ready mind, neither as being lords over God's heritage but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, you shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away. So much is said by my friend. Number one, the church needs elders because it needs shepherding. He said, feed the flock. That is, shepherd the flock. He pictures Jesus as the chief shepherd and the elders as under-shepherds. Just as a shepherd loves his sheep and lives for his sheep, is in the sheep business, so an elder loves the members of the church. He lives for them and their spiritual growth. And he is in the sheep business. He is in the people saving, developing, growing business. and sees that it's done. We need chief shepherds, under shepherds today, who will render the loving care, who will feed and tend and call upon and spend time with and pick people up when they fall and bring them back and rescue them when they stray. Secondly, the church needs oversight. He said, taking the oversight thereof. The church will never move forward without men of authority who will responsibly superintend the affairs and the activities of the church. Thirdly, the church needs those who are not as lords, but who are willing and who are ready to do the work. And they who ask the apostles in Hebrews 13 and 17, watch for our souls. We need men who are concerned about the spiritual condition of all the Christians in the church, and who will give them the constant, the active attention that they need, advising them, praying with them, instructing them. Then last, we need examples. He said, not as lords, but rather as leaders, examples for the flock. Basic need of all of them is to have somebody that we can look up to. And who better than an elder in the church who is spiritual and mature and wise and good and devout and godly? Example we can follow. I don't think there's anybody that can deny that we need them. We need them now, but how can we meet this need? Well, we can follow the advice of the apostles in Acts 6 and 3 when they needed some men to take charge of certain business. He said, look ye out among you. I think that's what we need to do today, is look out among us. I believe the chief principal reason that we don't have elders today is because that we have not been looking for them. They're there. We've got men of talent. We've got men of qualification who can be ordained for that very office. Secondly, I would say plan ahead.
Concerning the plan that they did in the city a number of years ago, a five-year plan, if I remember correctly. In that 5 years, they were going to qualify and train men who 5 years later would be ordained into the Lord's church as elders, and they accomplished that.
It may take you less time. It might take you longer time. But the main thing is plan for it and work for that realistic goal. And then train men for the office. We train men for teaching. We train men for preaching. Why can't we train them for the eldership? You know, I've never known a born leader or a born salesman. I've never known a mother whose child was born in the good world. She's got me a little salesman. She's got me a little leader, a little preacher. Now, she might plant those seeds into that child's mind over the years. And my mother planted the seeds in my mind. I didn't realize they were there until I was about 30 years old. I realized what my idea to be a preacher. It was her. We need some mothers and fathers who will plant that desire in the hearts of their sons and in the hearts of their daughters, who will be the wives of those men. And those wives are just about as important as those men. But you see, the ability of leadership is something that comes as a result of training. It is the result of a process of skillful schooling. And so we need to train men for that office. Then we need to encourage men to desire and to train for the office of being an elder in the church. You know, there's nothing wrong with your desiring that office. In fact, it's very scriptural. In 1 Timothy 3 and 1, he said, if any man desire the office of the bishop, he desires a good work. There are two words for desire there. The first one, according to divine means, to reach or stretch out, is used only in the middle voice, signifying the mental effort of stretching oneself out for a thing, of longing for it, with stress upon the object that is desired. If a man seeks the office of a bishop and gives himself up to the preparation for it, he is desiring an honorable work. That doesn't mean he's going to scheme and plot for that office to try to maneuver himself into position to be an elder. But it means that he's going to train by aspiring and working for to possess those qualifications, growing, developing until he reaches that point where the members of the church will recognize his leadership and his qualifications. Then I would say, last, be realistic. Find the idealistic, my friends, about the men who occupy this high and honorable office. We need to be realistic about the matter. We're not going to find any perfect men. We can find men who have all of the qualifications to an appreciable degree, to a good degree. We can ordain them to that office and they'll grow with the responsibility that we have given to them. So So in conclusion, I would say to you this afternoon, we are in a leadership crisis. We're always going to be in a leadership crisis. Our world is in one. Our nation is in one. And the church is in a leadership crisis today. We need men who are characterized by complete and total faith in God. And who have a devotion to His will that will move them and motivate them to desire and want to train themselves and qualify themselves for that office. Good men, godly men, devout men. To be the leaders of the Lord's church. There is no church today that is strong than that. You cannot lead people any higher, or you cannot expect people to go any higher than their leadership. The only way that the church is going to go onward and forward and upward is when we have leaders that are that kind of people. So I believe that when we see elders who are proven Christians and who are proven leaders in the churches across the land, we see the church begin to grow and we see it prosper. I believe today that in this audience will be found men and women who will pray about and will talk about and who will preach about and will think about day by day the need, the urgent need for elders. And may there be born within us this sense of urgency that will catch on like a wildfire. We'll pass throughout this land and throughout the churches. Maybe see elders ordained in every church is what the New Testament tells. You know, I thought while I was coming up here, what a wonderful thing it would be one of these days to see an elder study. We've been having this preacher study for about 25 years. Wouldn't it be wonderful to see elders in the churches throughout the land who would meet to motivate and study together? See an elder study. I'm good.